Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
The CSM's original intent was to really focus on adoption and making sure customers are getting a return on their value. It's turned into probably the catch-all in a lot of companies where they're doing support and they're doing billing. Like my CSM's here doing billing. And I was like, why are you guys doing billing? I went to our CFO and I said, why are they doing billing? And he said, well, because I don't have enough people on my team to do it. And I'm like, so now the CSM is doing billing and you're yelling at me because we're not retaining customers. And that's because they can't do their job because they're doing support, they're doing billing, they're doing, you know, and everyone's like, well, the CSM has a relationship, have them do it, right? So,
oh, and by the way, you're not giving me any more budget. You're not giving me more budget, but you're taking my people.
I mean, they don't have a relationship with the accounts receivable team.
Yeah.
Right. I know.
So is your CS team still doing billing?
Their cost? No. I told them to stop.
Nice.
And it's a interesting little interesting switch that's happening right now. So,
Josh, see, you're not mid banter, so it's like you don't know what to do. You're kind of frozen in time here.
I'm frozen by the silence and the seriousness, the levity. No, not levity. The anti-levity. The gravity of this conversation. Whatever. Okay, let's start. Now you threw me off, Christy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Unchurned CSMBS, starring myself, Josh Actor, Christy Faltaruso, and John Johnson, who is in absentia this afternoon as we're filming on Monday afternoon. He's over in Seattle. Christy, what's going on? How was your weekend? We're going to introduce our guest in a second.
Weekend was great. I actually had an opportunity to meet Emma Lowe, who is another customer success professional. Her and her husband flew into Long Island, New York, which nobody comes out here. You know that, Josh. So you can imagine my surprise when they said they were coming out here and that they were also bringing another LinkedIn influencer from a different part of the world, more like branding and community, to come. And we all got together for coffee. So I got to like have this like really interesting, like LinkedIn influencer, kind of like, you're super cool moment of content I didn't know existed out there. So that was my weekend. That was my highlight.
Cool. Sounds like a really cool weekend.
Wow, Josh. Okay. Well, what did you do? That was so cool. How did you trump my weekend?
No, my weekend is intentionally lame. I caught up on Succession. So I've completed season 3 now, ready for the last season. See what happens.
Wow, you're just on season 3?
Yeah. But I know that the old man dies because I was walking to the park one day, I was walking to the park one day with my dog and they were filming a funeral for Succession at the local church on Park Avenue. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Carrie, what are you binging these days? No, let's do a formal introduction to Carrie Buchanan. Carrie is the Chief Customer Officer and CXO also, am I right, Carrie?
I'm totally screwing this up.
Chief Experience Officer. We'll have to understand what that means in a second. The Chief Experience Officer at PopMenu. Carrie was previously CCO at Pluralsight. And held executive level roles at Infor, so big companies, ERPs. And then I also want to talk to you about your experience at Salesforce, because you were a leader at CS within Salesforce.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know what CS is like at Salesforce. But welcome, Carrie, to the banter.
Yes, thank you. I'm excited to be here. I was saying earlier, I feel very special to have been asked to be on this. So I've been looking forward to it.
Well, it's something that you'll soon regret, but if not already.
Well, I told Carrie, I said,
she's
super busy actually doing work all day. So that's why she doesn't have to like bother with all the LinkedIn noise that's out there.
Yeah. And who's the best out there at creating LinkedIn noise, Christy?
I mean, I would say I'm the noisiest. I wouldn't say my content's the greatest, but I definitely like to make noise.
But you make good noise. You make harmonious
sounds.
Not the cacophony of others out there. Yeah. Carrie, I want to talk about work, but I also want to talk about Atlanta. I think you're the first person from Atlanta. You live in Atlanta right now, is that correct?
Or
the Atlanta metro area?
I do, and I'm in the office today, back to work in the office. So It's kind of exciting to actually see people in person every day.
I'm actually genuinely interested in this because my brother and my nephew and his wife live in Atlanta. And so I go there, you know, fairly often. And I've been wanting to do a customer success networking happy hour in Atlanta because I notice there's a bunch of folks that are in Atlanta. But I assume that it's just going to be tough in Atlanta, that maybe they don't have the density of the tech world out there yet. But prove me wrong. Like, what's the tech landscape of Atlanta?
Actually, yeah, it's very techy here in Atlanta. And we have some great companies here. Google's got offices now, Microsoft, Salesforce. We have a ton of big customers here, right? We've got Delta, we got FedEx. Well, FedEx is Memphis, but close by, UPS. So there's a lot going on, and events have actually been pretty good here. I know I've attended some myself, and it seems like there's a good turnout. And a lot of companies, for whatever reason, are starting to build in our Midtown area, which is interesting. If you've been to Atlanta, you'll see a lot of the buildings going up there. So, yeah, you should come.
I think Terra area.
It's actually Midtown is actually downtown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll see a bunch of skyscrapers there. So. Yeah, you should come. I've had a lot of successful events here in Atlanta with customers around, particularly around the SaaS world. So,
will you help me organize the event?
I will help you, absolutely.
Single-handedly, yeah. Josh. She's going to stop what she's doing together in her current role.
Perfect. Perfect. She's too busy for LinkedIn, but not too busy to help Josh Actor organize happy hour and drinks.
I'm all about the face-to-face. That's, you know, bring people together, I think is super important. So.
Cool. And now you're the chief experience officer at Pop Menu.
Yes.
So it's for restaurants. Tell us what's Pop Menu.
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of like a CRM tool for restaurants. You know, so we do everything from online ordering to marketing. We have a couple AI tools for answering phones. A lot of just reporting of how well your business is doing. We build websites for our customers. And the role itself, this is actually a new role at Pop Menu. I mean, I would say they're adolescent startup, kind of deciding what to be when they grow up. And they created this role, you know, it's a traditional customer, chief customer officer role where, you know, I have onboarding, I have design, I have support, I have the customer success manager. It's not a big team, about 50 people. But my role also is really tied to making sure that the overall experience is up to par. And so I own retention, I own the number. And then, you know, as part of that, I have to work with the product team. So I spend a lot of time with product, making sure that the reasons why we might not be retaining customers that are, you know, due to the product, the more challenging part is working with sales. Making sure we're setting the right expectations when we sell the product.
They're always going to have it by the next quarter, right?
Yeah. Oh, I get involved with some good ones. And I will tell you, this is the first time I've been in the restaurant industry, and the customers are very, very different than, you know, an ERP customer. So they're a lot more compassionate and a lot less business savvy, a lot of really interesting conversations around why they aren't staying with us. I can spend time talking to a lot of the customers that are leaving us. And I'm starting to see some companies start to do this with a chief experience officer. And I think the biggest difference in my mind from kind of where I was to now is we really own the listening strategy. So thinking about all the different points of feedback that you get, whether it's through the product, whether it's through NPS surveys, CSAT surveys, and really like funneling all that together to determine, you know, what it is we need to be doing about all of that data, and then how do we actually then action on it and then get back to our customers on how we're going to fix that.
So what's in it, Christy? Did you want to? I don't want to.
I've got a bunch of stuff, but I want you to finish your thought, Josh.
So I go, then you go, then I go.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that feels really awkward and uncomfortable, but yeah.
Okay. So, Carrie, like, you've got, like, you know, what's in your marketing mix? What's in your tech stack? I don't know. What's in your listening stack? What's in your listening mix?
So we use Gainsight. That's one of the tools that we use, and we actually use that for our surveys, which is great because, you know, if you guys have used Gainsight before.
And what are your surveys? Are we talking like NPS surveys, or are we talking customer satisfaction?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in that as opposed to like the Gainsight or client success,
Which one's the greatest. So we do the traditional NPS where you're actually sending that out quarterly, but we also collect it through the product. So we give customers the opportunity anytime that they want to give us feedback, they can through the product, which is always interesting. And then we'd have the traditional CSAT where after onboarding, we'll send out a survey, support as well. We'll send out a survey. One of the things that I'm starting to do a lot more of is pulling customers together in focus groups. And obviously visiting customers, because I think you can learn a lot more talking directly to customers than through the surveys. And they tend to be a lot harsher when you actually talk to them.
I mean, you said you're a face-to-face person. Are we talking like you're actually like going to the drive-thru and you're like, you're pulling up and you're having a heart-to-heart?
Yeah, sort of like that. Yeah. Usually we're not at the drive-thru. Usually it's the customer sitting at their counter at the restaurant or bar.
But you're actually going in person and speak to your customers.
Yes.
Holy shit. That's what a novelty that is.
Yeah. Some of the bigger ones for sure.
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy actually talking to the customer directly. It's, you know, kind of what we used to do a long time ago before we all get sequestered in our home.
Yeah. Call you old fashioned, but you know, actually talking to customers face to face.
I know.
I mean, I've got a million more questions around like, how do you share those insights with the rest of your organization? Mm-hmm. Who gets what type of information? But I want to let Christy go because I think she's got some good thoughts that she's been noodling on there.
Josh, you know where I'm going to take this, right? So if you've reviewed, yes, you do. If you've looked at Carrie's background, then you would know she was
in consulting.
Yeah, she was.
Oh, she was in consulting. Go figure. And she's a successful C-suite leader. Yes.
So, Carrie, if you've not listened to any of our previous episodes, then it's totally okay. You don't have to. You didn't have to. It wasn't a prerequisite for you to be here today. But so many of our guests have actually started their careers in consulting and have then grown into customer success and customer experience. And so I have this hang up that Josh is very well aware of now, that I feel like I'm missing this foundational part of my career because I didn't go through the consulting world. So I want to know, based on your experience, how do you feel like consulting has prepared you for where you are today?
I mean, I think it's the number one reason why I'm here today. I think one, just having worked so close to customers when they're actually trying to use a software or build the software. You know, I started, I was 20 years at Accenture, and I started back before we actually had SaaS, so it's been a while, but really kind of seeing things from their perspective. I think the other thing, and this is, I'm actually doing a internal talk on this tomorrow, is that as a consultant, you spend a lot of time kind of peeling back the onion and digging in to really understand why customers want something. And you know, you have to as a consultant, right? Because you're building a system or you're putting together a system. And a lot of times they'll ask you for things. You're kind of like, that makes absolutely no sense why you would want that, right? And so really kind of digging in there. And then I think just how you structure working with customers, right? It's like, you know, I'm very like plan oriented, right? And I think, you know, if you've ever done, I'm sure you've done a lot of work around kind of the customer journey, but really kind of understanding like what that customer is going through and all those different cycles. It's kind of similar when you're doing a consulting project, right? You're trying to like understand all the different stages and what they're really trying to achieve. I think, you know, consultants in general, and I do think it's a skill you can build. So there's still hope for you, Christy.
There's hope for me. But, see, Josh, did you hear that? There's still hope for me. Yeah.
it's a very like, you know, I think it depends on how long you've been in consulting, but it's just your there's such a way that you think about problem solving that kind of gets ingrained with you. And so you're always like, you know, when you're running into customer issues and problems, you kind of think of that problem more like a mini project, and how are you going to like figure out what's going on, and then how are you going to solution on it, you know, and then how are you going to, you know, follow up later to measure it. So I like to hire a lot of consultants as well, maybe because that's how they, you know, they think similar ways. But I do think it's for me personally, I think too, that especially at the C level, having had, you know, a lot of teams have implementation, right? And that, to me, that's like a really big area where if you don't do that right, you're not setting that customer up for success later on. So even when you get to the success world, you might not solve that, right? So I really focus, especially once that sale happens, on my onboarding and implementation team to make sure that they're setting the customer up for success.
Are you suggesting that a consulting background is helpful for that onboarding and implementation team?
I do. Yeah, I do. Yes.
Because they're structured or what's the,
yeah,
what's
because they're really thinking about what is this customer really trying to achieve? Right. And how am I going to actually set them up in a way that they're going to see the value in that? You know, I've seen people, you know, and I will tell you, like my team right now, this is something that I'm working with them, is that they kind of have come in and it's like task. I got to check this off. I got to do this. I got to do this. Boom, you're live, right? They're not actually, they're not spending the time to understand why the customers decided to do this. You know, choose our platform. What value are they trying to get out of it? What's going to be the most important thing for them to see that value? Because every customer buys for a different reason. And sometimes if I look at reasons why I've got customers churning, is because they never really understood fully what we were going to help them with, right? They had this kind of high level, but we didn't really show them, walk them through that. So I do think it's just that kind of like, you know, that kind of understanding what they're trying to achieve and then getting them set up to a point where they can measure value. That's kind of like the way like a traditional consultant would think about a project.
So Carrie, if you had to say your top three skills that you took away from your time in consulting, give me your top three.
Yeah. Listening, super important. I will tell you, it's a skill I really had to work at when I was younger because I always felt like I had the solution in my head and would be thinking about that, but the customer's still talking and not even probably missing half of what I should have. So really listening, I think, is super important. The other thing I would say is being very curious. My own family makes fun of me because I ask so many questions. They're like, Mom, you always ask so many questions. But I'm like, that's just, I ask a lot of questions because I'm just trying to really seek when someone says something, I'm like, maybe I don't really understand what it is they're telling me. So asking lots of questions. And I think the other thing is, it's funny because like in the customer world, the customer is always right. But I think you got to think about how is it a mutual benefit for both companies. And I think that's a hard skill, particularly in customer success, because people, customer success people are like the most amazing people, right? They deal with the customer. They're very empathetic. They want to do everything they can to make that customer successful. But there's actually a medium point somewhere where you have to balance what's good for the business that you're in versus what's good for the customer. And how do you have that mutual beneficial agreement together? Because sometimes if you do things for a customer, it's not really going to be the right thing, right? For example, you know, like you can't just build a feature for one customer, even though they're going to be upset about it. So being able to have that kind of balance between the two, and that's a hard skill, I think, for some people, because they just want to make sure that that customer is always happy and they're seen as the one that's making them happy. So those would be my top three.
By the way, it's a really hard thing to do to deflect a customer request, to see like the forest above the trees. As the CEO of my company, whenever I hear a customer request, my instinct, I always say, oh yeah, absolutely. We'll have it next month. We'll do it. Like we'll adjust the roadmap. No worries. Then my head of engineering gets a Slack message. He's like, what did you just agree to? But it's my head of CS that has the actual backbone to be like, no, actually, you know, we'll add this to the backlog. We'll like, thank you for the information. And, but we're not guaranteeing something. So I now being in it with real customers and accounts that are growing, like I see and appreciate so much more the strength that it takes to be able to take feedback and requests and not immediately cave to it, but understand the broader context of what's good for the customer and good for the business.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting point, though, because I don't think a lot of customers, still today even, truly understands what buying a SaaS product really means, right? Like, they come in wanting to have everything exactly the way they want it, and they don't realize the benefits of having something like that. You know, back when I was at Salesforce, I had the, actually was at a dinner with he was a vice president of IT at FedEx, right? Really big customer of Salesforce. And he was complaining because he said that a lot of the partners that they have been using to actually do the work, you know, implementation partners, were pushing back on him because they didn't want to customize the solution, right? And he was actually giving me this feedback. So I would go talk to the partners and tell them, you know, stop, like, you should do everything that the customers ask. But, you know, and you guys know in the SaaS world is that once you get off of that, once you go onto that customization track, you start to lose all the innovation that you could be getting. And so one of the things I always tell customers when they're upset is, like, you know, have you ever thought about changing your process to actually map to the software so that you could actually get more benefit out of it versus trying to customize the software to actually do it the way you've always done it, right? Because in a lot of senses, the platforms are created because they take the best of all things that they hear, and that then potentially could be very beneficial to customers. But they're so used to doing things the way that they've always done things, it's hard for them to see that. So it doesn't always work, but sometimes, you know, customers, I had one just a couple weeks ago, and he was like, oh yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought of that that way. So
Carrie, can we go to your time at Salesforce? Because I'm also very interested in this. So you started your career there, you were a director, and then you kind of moved up to senior leadership there. From a leadership standpoint, how did the role evolve? And what were some of the changes that you really liked as you kind of shifted those roles? And what were some of the things that you kind of lost touch of, right? I talk to leaders all the time who are like, yeah, when you're at a certain level, you're very connected to the customer, or you're connected to your team. And as you start to move up, right, you lose some of that connectivity and you're focused on strategy, and it's, you know, the whole, it's lonely at the top. So what were some of the changes that you experienced through that progression at Salesforce?
And you were there from 2012 to 2018, right? Just for context?
So I guess maybe my style is a little bit different. So I guess I didn't see a big impact there. And when I left Accenture, you know, I was actually leading teams. So I almost kind of took a step back. My first role there, I was a customer success executive. So I was supporting, it's a paid for resource. So I actually had Coca-Cola as my customer, the global entity. So it didn't feel, it felt like, you know, I had a lot underneath me. But one of the things, you know, I guess the harder thing is just making sure that I think for some leaders it's hard, and I would say this is probably something hard for me as well, is I want to come in and like do everything for everyone, right? And help them all be very successful. So kind of taking a step back from that and feeling comfortable that people can be accountable for their own work and being there more for a sounding board. So part of me moving into the role, you know, from specifically at Salesforce into a leadership role was kind of letting go on some of the small stuff, but being there for the big stuff. And when I say being there for the big stuff is making sure that I didn't lose the connection with the customer themselves. I think it's very easy to get into a leadership role where you actually don't meet with customers. You're too focused on your team. And so I always had to have the balance of building relationships. So for some of the our more strategic customers, making sure that I would have a relationship, meet with the customer, especially those in Atlanta. Like I said, the customer events, I used to actually do customer events where I'd bring the customers together in town. So I think that the other thing that's I think it's important is to make sure that you're still, as a leader, it's easy to kind of like step out of having like, I'll call it like a superpower, right? You know, when you're an individual, you're really good at something. I always wanted to keep involved in some of the things that I really enjoyed. So for example, when I was a director, I did a lot of stuff with my customer around governance models and helping set up governance models. So that was something when I came a leader, I would go around with my CSMs and do workshops on governance.
I'm sorry. You enjoyed this, setting up governance models.
This, yes.
Oh, okay. I just had to clarify. Okay.
I know. It seems kind of like a silly thing, but that's the consultant in me. So
yeah. That's absolutely.
See, going back to why consulting is so critical.
Well, Christy, would you want to set up governance models?
I don't know how. No, I could. I could figure it out. I'd be fine.
But you know, here's the thing. Like, the reason why I loved it was because that was something that I found so many customers struggled with, right? And when I say a governance model, it's, you know, like if you've got a, you know, whatever, let's say it's Salesforce, how are you going to actually get input from your different teams around what's needed? How, you know, especially if you have multiple instances of it, how do you manage that? So kind of keeping into some of those things. And so it's almost kind of like, I always thought about it growing up is, you know, like you went to school, right? And that was like kind of your day-to-day job. And then you would have extracurricular activities. And that would be like setting up governance models or, you know, playing sports or something like that. So I think having that balance, because it's really easy as a leader to kind of lose contact with what's going down, you know, kind of at the individual contributor level. And so that's something I've always done, you know, ever since then is I love doing skip level meetings with my team because I know my leaders sometimes hide things from what's really going on. And so, in fact, I've just been doing them now with a lot of people here.
Ooh, what kind of information do you get out of those skip level meetings that you think are being hidden?
I wonder if it's like that they're hiding it or is it just people aren't sharing with their direct manager and maybe they're more inclined to share with you?
I think it's sentiment, right? Like one of the things, I just had one last week and like the feedback from my team was there's so much change going on and people, we got to be careful. There's so much change and we've been through so much change. You know, I've only been here for 5 months. And so there's been change. And I'm like, you know, change is actually a good thing, right? So I was talking to one of the folks on my team last week and she brought it up and she said, you know, there's a lot of change. And last year we went through this and like, you know, it wasn't good change, but this year I feel like even though we have the same amount of change, I'm okay with it because I know why. Like I know why we're doing it and I know that there's a purpose behind that, right? So all I'm hearing from my team is that there's a lot of change and we got to be careful that we don't change things too much. Then I go talk to someone who's, you know, maybe talking about it and they're saying, it's great and we love it. As long as we know why we're changing, then we're good with it. So those are like the kind of little nuggets that you get, or something is a really big, serious issue. And then you talk to the people and they're like, no, that's okay. It's not bad. We're okay with that.
Interesting. What information do you get about your customers in your book of business that you might not get?
That's an interesting one. And what I always think about this is you got our version of this customer. You know, I hear things like that customer is so difficult. They've never been easy to work with. They're always upset about everything, right? And then you guys still got me? I might have some issues there. Okay, I'm back. And so it's
yeah,
always this negativity. And then you go talk to the customer and they give you a different perspective, right? Well, this is what you guys told me. This is why this was so difficult. You've lied to me. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. Right. And what I always tell people, I know it's somewhere in the middle, right? We're not perfect. They're not perfect, but it's somewhere in the middle. And I usually get a lot of, it's always the customer's fault. We've never done anything wrong. Right. And you get on the customer side, they've never done anything wrong. It's always our fault. So I always like to balance those two. And then it becomes a little bit of a, you know, a guessing game as to what the actual truth is. But I think that's why I love talking to customers, because you never get the full explanation until you actually talk to them directly. And some of them, you know, I think are a little over exaggerated, but you'll always have that.
I want to go back to Salesforce for one moment. You were there in some during some formative years of the building out of the customer success space as a SaaS space, 2012 to 2018. I think at the time, around that time, they probably had made an investment in Gainsight, I believe. Could be wrong, but and there were some other startups that were coming up. I think Client Success, Christy, was coming up, right? About the beginning of that time. Do you have, having been an insider there at that time, why, Carrie, is there not a more, or was there not a more pronounced and intended product for CS at Salesforce?
I'm sorry, Josh, I just lost you here.
Oh, well, I threw you a little bit of a tough ball, so a hard ball, so
I'm
maybe
back.
That's why.
No, that's okay. So, I apologize. We believe it or not, I'm in the office and we're having internet issues today. So.
That's why it's better to work from home.
Exactly. And you don't have to
wear
pants.
I know. Yeah, that's true.
So you were at Salesforce during like some formative years for the CS industry.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm wondering, why did Salesforce not take it upon themselves to become a big player in CS? Do you have any sense of that, having been there?
You mean like doing some sort of software, building something, some software around it?
Becoming a CSP of their own right.
Yeah, it was definitely something we had talked about, in all transparency, because we actually built, for example, if you look at what Gainsight does today, we actually built a custom solution like that we use. We called it the early warning system, which was really kind of like the premise of Gainsight and, you know, being able to track, adoption and utilization, all that good stuff. And I think, Mark Benioff, like, because there was a lot of different areas, you know, we could have gone into ERP, could we go into, you know, some of the, like, the fringe areas. And I think the feeling was to just do what they did really, really well, right? And even though we had, you know, customer success managers, and, you know, some will argue that's where the CSM started, doing the software itself just wasn't something that we felt that, with all the other stuff that we did would be another thing to take on. Right. So if you look at the investments, I think when I started, we had just acquired, ExactTarget from a marketing perspective, and they've taken some other, you know, fringe, obviously, like things like Slack they acquired. Just doing too many things, I think, was, a decision. And if you look at Salesforce today, they're kind of changing how they even look at customer success, right? Like the customer success manager role has really, really changed since I left there. I keep in touch with a lot of people there. They're moving more toward more technical, so like technical account manager type roles for customers, and they'll still have CSMs, but they're at the really kind of high level. They are looking at these like architect type roles that are a little bit more than customer success managers, where they're actually helping like architect the solution with some of the bigger customers. They moved away from kind of the traditional assigning CSMs to more of a like a hub model. I've been following that a lot because I do agree with that approach, right? Where you can't continue to put CSMs on accounts. You need to, have more like programs around it. And I think, when we looked at kind of some of the stuff we wanted to do and what we had already built, we thought, how do we actually do this, right? Because it's so customized. It probably took like 15 years for us to really build out the kind of early warning system model, which is probably why we ended up investing in Gainsight, because we did see value in it.
Josh, it's because it was a really tough question.
I know.
Well, what's interesting is how many companies run customer success from Salesforce today, right? And they don't have a formal way of orchestrating that, right? So people kind of haphazardly piece things together to make Salesforce work for them. So I think it's interesting because I do think that Salesforce actually probably has the most customer success organizations using their platform than any CSP in the space. So to me, it's like wild why you wouldn't double down on that.
Well, there's one answer to that. It's pretty obvious. Total available market, right? Like the TAM, the opportunity size, it's just not the same. You buy Slack, you get all businesses, all SaaS businesses in the world.
Yeah, but you don't have to make a lot of changes to Salesforce to make it work slightly better than it does today. We're not talking about a redesign. There doesn't need to be a product acquisition. It's literally modifying in some feature functionality and maybe connecting some dots a bit better.
It's a landing page, yeah. 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 Well, are we going to get Carrie back here? That Wi-Fi in Atlanta.
It's because all those tech companies that are in Atlanta.
You know what? Let's just take a commercial break. So, Christy, tell us how's She's So Sweet going? That's your new podcast. It just launched 2 weeks ago.
Yes. And
yeah, I was super excited. I've listened to a couple episodes myself. How's it going from your perspective?
So great. Actually, I just recorded last week, which the episode that will drop this Wednesday with the CRO at Calendly. And amazing. She was just super, super impressive. I got off my call by my recording with her and I like called my husband, Anthony, and I was like, I think I have a crush. Like, just a complete dynamo, powerhouse, super smart. Just her story
her
is
name?
So fantastic. You're going to see because you're going to watch my episode on Wednesday.
She forgot her name, folks.
I did not. Jessica Gilmartin.
Okay. So I got the name.
And she's fantastic. She actually was the CMO at Calendly and just recently stepped into the CRO role, but she's taking over marketing and sales. And so bringing the two teams together. So we were talking a bit about that as well. Just really, really fantastic. So I think the coolest thing for me is the response that I'm getting from people who are willing to participate. Just the caliber of the companies and these leaders have been super impressive. So I feel like honored and humbled every day I get a response and I'm like, wait, really? You want to be on my little show? So that's been really cool. And I'm actually preparing to launch a kind of special series that I'm going to weave in there called She's So Sweet, the He Edition, where I'm going to interview CEOs who have had hired and worked with female leaders and how they believe the diversity in their leadership organizations has changed the trajectory of their organization.
Is that an invitation for me to come on your show, Christy?
It might be.
It's not, Josh. But that's okay. I'm going to make it one.
I think that that's an interesting perspective on this, right? Like the whole She's So Sweet podcast is about women and their career trajectories and breaking into the C-suite that I want to get the he perspective of how our male counterparts really believe that we are bringing intrinsic value to the organization.
I have a really good recommendation. Can I recommend a guest for you?
You can recommend anything you'd like, Josh. It's going to be like a product request, which means it's just a recommendation and it may go in the backlog.
Well, but I'm going to text you incessantly until it happens.
Okay.
I recommend there's this guy out in Utah. His name is Dave Blake. And he's the founder of this amazing software called Client Success, but he needed some real oomph to come in there for leadership. So he hired this pit bull from Long Island.
He did hire somebody who's I brought some diversity to our leadership team.
You did. And so, yeah, I think you should bring Dave on and talk with your
boss. I don't know if I can bring Dave to talk about me. That feels weird.
I would happily be in the room as the intermediary and I can just lob the questions and just sit and enjoy the show.
We'll see. Anyway, our friend Carrie's back. So
Carrie, welcome back. We had a little promotional timeout while we were waiting for you. You know that Christy has a new podcast out?
Yeah.
Now we bantered. We did the banter thing. That's why the CS and BS is there. The BS is for technical difficulties.
We can now say that going back to the office maybe isn't the best thing if the internet doesn't work well, right?
Well, I said it's all those tech companies in Atlanta soaking up all the Wi-Fi, see? So.
Yeah, I know.
And you have to wear pants.
It's very busy.
Yeah. All right. Well, where do we go? You started talking about it a little bit in the last question about your pods. I think that might not be the word you use, but how you were going to create the formation of your CS team to manage your customer base. And I'd love to hear more about that and your theory, because it sounded like a theory that, you know, it can't just be a one-to-one of CS to account for it to really scale. So what are you doing right now at PopMenu?
Yeah, we just created a team. We're calling it the Success Hub. Nothing like really exciting name, but it's just
it's that, it's not exciting, right? If you say it like that. It's, you know, Carrie, Success Hub.
I want something different. Yeah, I want something different. I got to get my marketing folks to give me, like, you know, something more fun, like something.
Chrissy's really good at that.
ChatGPT, throw in ChatGPT, you'll get something. You got a ton of things you won't like first, but if you keep at it.
Yeah. I was trying to come up with some cute like restaurant names that I went thought that was silly. So that's okay. We're good now. But basically, there's so much stuff that if you think about like just the kind of day-to-day tasks that could really be done either through automation programs. We're actually doing a lot through kind of journeys, like onboarding journeys. You know, for new customers, we've got, we're rolling out some stuff around like some of our products, like how to use marketing, and then really leveraging some of the one-to-many webinars, like adoption type seminars, not so much on the selling of the product, but how to use the product. And because we're not a huge company, obviously I have to kind of think about, my costs, and I can't keep hiring people. So really using those customer success managers for the very complex, you know, the way it works in the restaurant industry is that you could have a owner who could actually have multiple concepts, right? So different types of restaurants, and each of those restaurants could have different types of locations. So you could have like 70, 80 different types of entities with one customer. And so really saving the customer success manager people dedicated to those bigger customers, and then using the Success Hub. So you still want to make it feel like there's someone there for you, but you do it more through a teaming perspective, right? So you have a team of people that can support you. And then we do a lot more proactive reach out to help with customers. Like having a health score is great. We've just rolled out a health score last year that helps us target customers that we know aren't adopting well. So those are ones that we're reaching out to. So I think it's a combination. And then the other thing that's really interesting, and Christy, you might have seen this in your role, is the notion of account managers versus customer success managers, right? So account managers who are renewing the business. And I've had renewal teams. I've had CSMs do renewals. I have had them not do renewals. It's an interesting kind of debate right now. But, you know, how do you actually leverage those account managers that can also help as well? And that's what we're doing right now.
Does account management report to you as well, Carrie?
Yeah, but they're kind of more focused on the renewal, right? So they've got a more of a commission-based type of target. And so that's kind of some of the debate that's going on as well, right? Is do you have CSMs that are more pure costs? We don't actually charge customers for CSMs here, but Salesforce did, right? Salesforce, you had to pay a premium to actually get a CSM. And if you didn't, you didn't get a CSM. So, you know, just trying to figure out, like, how do you actually leverage the resources that you have? And I know there's a lot of conversation.
So it sounds like there's a lot to unpack here. Let's go into this debate. What are the two sides of the debate that your team is having on this?
I think it's probably what should a CSM do? What is their role?
Okay. That sounds pretty existential.
I think the CSM's original intent was to really focus on adoption and making sure customers are getting a return on their value. It's turned into probably the catch-all in a lot of companies where they're doing support and they're doing billing. Like my CSM's here doing billing. And I was like, why are you guys doing billing? I went to our CFO and I said, why are they doing billing? And he said, well, because I don't have enough people on my team to do it. And I'm like, so now the CSM is doing billing and you're yelling at me because we're not retaining customers. And that's because they can't do their job because they're doing support, they're doing billing, they're doing, you know, and everyone's like, well, the CSM has a relationship, have them do it, right? So,
oh, and by the way, you're not giving me any more budget. You're not giving me more budget, but you're taking my people.
They don't have a relationship with the accounts receivable team.
Yeah.
Right. I know.
So is your CS team still doing billing?
The cost. No. I told them to stop.
Nice.
And it's a interesting little interesting switch that's happening right now. So we've had.
So what's the interplay between CS and the account management team? Like, how do you think about that? The relationship then and their interactions?
Yeah. So I will tell you, so it's, I've came from a world where I think it was a lot clearer. Right now we're just in early stages of rolling it out. There's the differences between the adoption piece, right? Because account managers are supposed to be upselling and renewing, but they can't actually do that if a customer's not adopting. So then when they go to talk to the customer, they might not be using something, which really should be the CSM's job. So it's kind of like, where's that fine line between,
right,
I missed the mark as a CSM and they're not adopting. Now the account manager can't actually upsell or renew. So what we're working through right now is our account managers right now are focused on the smaller ARR customers that don't have CSMs, because we don't have that dedicated person. So really focusing on, you know, like we basically define that, you know, a threshold for value, focusing on that, and then partnering more. So we want to make sure, like, if account managers are reaching out to CSMs, we have a plan around that, because the CSMs really should. So you have to have kind of clear swim lanes. I'm a geeky consultant, so I made us put together a very intense racy model of who does what across all the different functions. So we actually just rolled that out at the beginning of the year, so it's kind of clear. Because the biggest thing is you don't want customers to be like, who do I talk to? I've got five people reaching out to me. That always becomes a problem as well. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like they're getting exactly what they hired you for. It sounds like that you love organizational behavior and really making all the different groups work together, like pistons firing. And so sounds like you've got a lot going on there, but good things ahead, Kerry. And I've got nothing else. I want to thank you for your time on this episode. I want to make sure we lock in coffee talk when I'm next in Atlanta. And Christy, I want to promote one more time. I'm just going to keep promoting it all the time.
Oh, you're the best.
She's so sweet.
I know. It's a very clever name.
It's a very nice name.
Yeah, congratulations. I did see that.
Thanks,
that sounds
Kerry.
Like fun.
It that is. Was very so clever. I was just saying, thank you. We played around with names for quite a bit until we nailed something that was just cheesy enough. And so that was where we landed. And I got a lot of positive feedback on the name and the content so far. So I'm excited to keep it going. And we've got a lot of great content teed up for the next couple of weeks.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you, Kerry. Have a great rest of your week, everybody.
Great. Thanks. Bye, Kerry.